There is there's a tremendous amount to say. This sugya is just, in terms of quantity, quality, depth, implications, there's just so much in these gemaras, in this short passage. So even without counting all the subtopics, but just in terms of what we have left to focus on now, we have at least two major topics which connect, but each certainly has its own real estate. So on the one hand, there is the question of the trade-off of chatei kideish yizgatzmecha, that should you do a minor avera so that you yourself will avoid a greater avera? And then the other question of chatei kideish yizake chavercha, that should you sin so that your friend will avoid an avera? And while there's clearly a link between the two, I mean, they're trying to figure out the same hefetimtz in the Gemara, but clearly many links between the two, but there's enough difference about both of them that they have to each get their own attention. So first, we'll focus on the question of your own trade-off. To what extent are you expected to trade off doing an avera now to save yourself from some other problem that's already been set in motion or some similar situation? But before that, just we ran out of time yesterday. I just wanted to mention, just for the sake of comprehensiveness, it said that we spent some time talking about Zriya and Bishul and about the difference that seems to emerge between the two of them from this Gemara. And I had just mentioned that they're perennial foes, Zriya and Bishul, because they're always pitted against each other in terms of differences that seem to turn up. So just to finish that sentence, what was I referring to? So just to mention too, very quickly, is that on the one hand, when it comes to speeding the process up, so there is it's a little bit complicated. When it comes to Zareya, so on the one hand, we have this principle that it's not just putting seeds in the ground, but all kinds of things that encourage further, better growth is also included in Zareya. So watering the grass and the like. But at the same time, it's not everything. What's a little bit complicated is that there is a Gemara in Shabbos which says that try to say it as quick way as possible, that if you take something further away from the ground, that is kotzer, and if you bring it closer to the ground, where it'll get stronger nourishment from the ground, that is zareya. Gemara is talking about if you have a pot that has holes in it. So it rests, if you put it on the ground, it's going to get nourishment from the dirt. So if you put it on a peg, it's going to be a little bit removed from the dirt. It's not going to have as strong as a connection. So if you prick it up, if you pick it up, so that is, according to the Gemara, it says it's kotzer, because you're taking it out of its nourishment. And if you put it further in, that's zoreya. But most of the Rishonim say that has to be a din d'rabbanan. They have a proof why that is. They say that min ha-Torah, that's not actually prohibited. That's a din d'rabbanan. So it sounds like to speed up the process by bringing it closer, to slow down the process, either way, is not actually zareya. Let's say to speed up the process by putting it closer to the ground is not zareya. So the question is that we find when it comes to bishul, as we'll talk about, there's a concept called hagasa. If you're going to stir the pot to make it cook better, quicker, so then that is the malacha of bishul. That is something that's aser, it's aser min ha-Torah. So what's the difference? So it's another area where there is a difference that seems to emerge from Zriya and bishul. It's the Eglei Tal, when he talks about this, and others suggest that if you say that when it comes to Zriya, so we focus on the Ikar Maisa, putting it in, and when it comes to Bishul, you're not really chayiv until it's over, once we seem to have that distinction. So then that could explain this too, because perhaps making it grow quicker after you've already planted it in is not considered significant, because the malacha was really putting it in the first place. But when it comes to Bishul, if you're going to say that the chayiv really comes once it's actually cooked, so making that happen quicker is a malacha d'oraisa, because that's the nekuda sachiyav. So to do anything to make that happen at a time when it would not yet have happened, so that's itself the malacha. So he understands that chiluk to be an extension of this chiluk. What's also relevant possibly, or at least as a distinction, on a level, midrabanan. So we spoke about the other day a little bit about the idea of a knas, that sometimes midrabanan there is a concept of maisa shabbos, even though in the Torah there isn't. So that midrabanan, if one did a malach on Shabbos, so sometimes there's a penalty, you can't benefit from it afterwards. But the parameters differ from malacha to malacha, and you have to figure out why that is. So when it comes to bishul, so we find that one is not allowed to benefit from the food that was cooked on Shabbos, but they can benefit after Shabbos. But when it comes to zoreya, if something was planted in the ground, so there's a Mishnah in Gittin that says that it has to be uprooted. So how come that has to be uprooted and the cooked food eventually you can benefit from? So there are a number of different suggestions that are brought in the Bir Halacha and other Achronim and try to explain what exactly the distinction is. Some suggest, the Stipler suggests, that the idea is that the bishul is done already. You already cooked it, so you're not going to have any extra malacha taking place. So you might as well eventually have this kanas expire. But when it comes to Zriya, so the Maisa Zriya that you did on Shabbos, the whole thing is only going to benefit you after Shabbos anyway. And at that point, it's continuing to grow because of that. So that's a greater reason to have a harsher attitude towards the impact of the Zriya. So there's different permutations of this theory, but it all reflects the difference between the Zriya and Bishul in terms of the time frame. The longer time frame, either like the Stipler said, that the process is continuing into after Shabbos, or as others point out, that if the whole point is a knas, you shouldn't benefit from what you did. So when you cook on Shabbos, you expect to benefit from it right away. So it's enough of a knas to say you can't use it on Shabbos, but later on it can be used. But when it comes to Zriya, so the whole impact is not going to come later anyway. So it's not much of a knas to say, well, if you plant on Shabbos, you can't benefit from this plant on Shabbos. It's not much of a knas. So the knas has to have a more far-ranging impact, and that could possibly be the difference. Okay, anyway, just wanted to fill that in. At least two other areas where there's a contrast between bishul and zriya, and the question is asked. Okay, so now let's talk first of all about the trade-off that a person makes, the implication that you get from the Gemara, even though there are some unclear details. But it sounds like, at least when you're talking about yourself, that we should allow you or encourage you. It's also a question we'll have to talk about, this whole idea when the Gemara says "V'chi omrim lo le'adam" in the context of your friend, or the whole thrust of the sugya in general. Are we talking about what's asur or mutter? Are we talking about what's encouraged or discouraged? Are we talking about what we ask you to do? So, for example, let's say talking about vis-a-vis your friend. So you might say, it's not a question of what's asur or what's mutter. You might say, I don't want to do an aveira for my friend. I want to stay clean. I don't want to do an aveira kala. So the question might be, v'chi omrim lo, would we tell him, I'm sorry that you don't want to do it, but we ask you to do it anyway. This is an expression of arvus. That's a question we'll have to talk about in that context. But in general, there's room to wonder about this whole sugya. Are we talking about Isurim? Are we talking about mitzvos? Are we talking about good advice? Are we talking about what's encouraged, discouraged, permitted? It's not 100% clear. So to start with the initial assumption that we allow someone to do a small aveira to save himself from a bigger aveira, and of course there is already some room to question if it's all the same. I was talking about whether he did the initial aveira b'shogeg and there's a potential korban involved. Are we talking about where he did the initial aveira b'mezid and there's a potential skila involved? Or is there no onish involved? For a moment, we'll group them all together, even though there's clear differences between them. So we could ask the question from either direction. If we assume that we do let you do the aveira, a small aveira, to save you from a bigger aveira, is that a chiddush at all? Is there anything that would indicate otherwise? Or should we say, it's not only not a chiddush, but the whole havamina we don't understand? Clearly, you have a cost-benefit analysis, that if you're looking at a bigger aveira, why would we not obviously tell everybody, do the smaller aveira to save yourself from the bigger aveira? Why isn't that simple math? So you could ask the question from either end, is the conclusion that we allow it, if that's the conclusion, is that a chiddush? And in fact, maybe it's so obvious that we don't even understand the whole question. The math is so straightforward, what exactly is going on here? So to address it, again, you can address it from either angle, so is the whole thing a chiddush? Maybe. There is a concept that we find elsewhere, which I added in the Maamar Komos this morning. For example, there is a Gemara Masechet Pesachim that has the expression that Hamidu Divreihem B'Makom Karis, that Chazal insisted on adherence to their Takana, even in a situation where the alternative is Karis. And the Gemara over there in Pesachim is talking about various Takanas which were enforced, even though they led to either a Bittul of Karban Pesach or a Bittul of Bris Milah, both of which carry an onesh of Karis with them, and yet apparently were willing to insist on the adherence to the Din D'Rabbanan even though it's B'makom Karis. So for example, if you take a look at the Gemara there, but the Gemara talks about there was a Gzeira not to do Hazah on Shabbos. So the question was, if somebody was a Tamei Meis and it was Erev Shabbos, Erev Pesach Shechalios B'Shabbos, so we would uphold this Gzeira not to do Hazah, to kasher him from his Tumah, to be Metayer him, even though that's going to have the consequence he's going to have to forfeit the Karban Pesach. Or, for another example, there was a Gzeira that if a Ger converted on Erev Pesach, so he had the Bris Milah and he had the Tefillah, so we theoretically now he's Jewish and he should be able to eat the Karban Pesach, but we have the Gzeira that he has to wait a week because we don't want him to think that the Tefillah that he had for his Geiris would have taken him out of Tumas Meis as well. Maybe he'll confuse the two. So once again, he loses out on the Karban Pesach, which has got a Karis associated with it because of that Din D'Rabbanan. Just mentioned the third one, the Gemara also says, the context of Bris Milah, that it's Machlokas and Argamar later on about this whole concept, but the question of if there is a Hotzah involved in bringing a knife to the Bris Milah, and let's say it's even Hotzah Darabanan, so would that be upheld, even if that means you can't perform the Bris Milah, which is a theoretical Karis as well. The gather of when Karis applies for missing a Bris is a little bit of a complicated question, but at least on a theoretical level, the Gemara says in all those examples that Chazal insisted on adherence to their Din D'Rabbanan, even though the consequence was a Bittul Aseh, in that case, the Yesh Bo Karis. So, Emidu Devrayim B'Makom Karis. Question about that?
With the Korban Pesach cases, but even if the guy does Pesach Sheni, the Korban is still as Karis?
So presumably not. That's also a question to figure out. Especially the Bris Milah, you could ask the question even better, right? Because if you have the next day, it happens to be a Machlokas Rishonim, the Rambam, the Raiz, and others, what exactly we mean when we say this Karis for a Bittul Bris Milah. But the invocation of Karis here, we have to figure out exactly what it means. Does it mean there actually is Karis? Does it mean that it's a theoretical area of Karis? It's a question we have to still see a little bit more about. But in any event, so here the Gemara says, in that case the Gemara says that we do insist on the Din D'Rabbanan despite the consequences. So the Magen Avraham, which I put in the Maamar Komos as well, he raises this question in this context. Why don't we say that there is a similar assumption? So let's say Chazal made it Xavier, they insisted on it there, even though Makom Karis. So let's insist on it here as well. Now let's say they made it Xavier and Norodia Sapas on Shabbos. That's it. Whatever the consequences are. So Magen Avraham quotes this question from the Sefer Pikayon D'Yonah, and he says, it's not really a question because we don't have a klal, basically. It's not clear when Chazal said this and when they didn't say this. Sometimes they decided that it was a situation that they would enforce such a position, and sometimes they didn't, so we don't have to come with an a priori expectation that that's always the rule. We don't have to come and say, in other words, when the Gemara says over there, Hamidu Devrayhem, it's not a klal that they always insisted on their rule. It's that in those examples, the Gemara is saying, they decided that they are going to impose their rule despite the consequences. But it doesn't mean that that's always a given. Hi.
Can you explain case that you just can't derive that psachim case over here because chiyuv skila is worse than karis, so it's not necessarily follows the logic.
Possibly. I mean, ultimately, it comes down to karis. It's the kind of a kimle b'derabmine kind of svara. But you're right that there is a difference, and we'll see if that makes a difference. But initially, that's the question he asks. I can't resist mentioning a little synergy. If there's anyone who's learning Daf Yomi, so there is a relevance of today's Daf Yomi to this question. Because there is a tshuva by the Binyan Shlomo, who talks about similar mechanics. The Binyan Shlomo, I always forget whether he was the genius or the super genius. Rav Shechter says the two brothers, Rav Shlomo Mivilna and Tzal Mivilna, one was a genius, one was a super genius. I always forget which one was which, but either way, he was pretty smart. So the tshuva is Binyan Shlomo, Rav Shlomo Mivilna, he has a tshuva where, agav other things, he talks about this question. And he happens to be talking about today's Daf Yomi, so I can't resist mentioning that today is Sukkah Daf Chav Beis. So there is a Mishnah which he invokes. He's really interested in the subject of Sukkah. That Sukkah is a mitzvah sase, Pashtus, right? The mitzvah to eat and sleep in the Sukkah. But we tend to relate to it, whether halachically or just the way we kind of act, as if there's an Isser involved, that if we eat something on Sukkahs inside the house, or outside the Sukkah, that there's something we're doing wrong. As if there's some type of a Isser. But Pashtus, it's really a lack of a mitzvah saseh. Would you call that a kumbi asay? Like you're doing an Aveira if you eat outside the Sukkah, even though there's no Isser expressed in the Chumash? Or would you say that, no, it's a bitul asay. There's a mitzvah saseh to sit in the Sukkah, so here you're simply not doing the mitzvah. And it's a bitul asay biyadayim, but that's still called a sheva al taisa. How would you categorize this? Somebody eats outside the sukkah, is that a sheva al taisa, or is that a kumbi asay? That's the question he discusses. So in that context, he invokes that the Mishnah, in today's Daf Yomi, the Mishnah seems to say that theoretically one could have a sukkah in a tree, let's say. Or a sukkah that is built together with a tree as part of the walls of the sukkah. And the Mishnah says, depending on the circumstances, at least under some of the circumstances, ein olin b'yontif, that since, as we discussed earlier this year, in a different context, you can't climb on a tree on yontif. So if you have your sukkah on a tree, you may not be able to go up into it on yontif. So says the Binyan Shlomo, it sounds like that even if this is the only sukkah you have, and because of this gezeira, you're not going to be able to access a sukkah on sukkahs, and you'll be forced to eat and sleep outside the sukkah, nonetheless, Chazal upheld this din. That's what it says in the Mishnah. It says clearly that despite the fact that you have your sukkah there, you're still not allowed to go up into the tree. So he is trying to prove in his tshuva that it must be that sukkah is just a sheva al taseh, because he assumes that Chazal would not tell you to do an aveir b'kum v'yaseh in order to uphold the din d'rabbanan. He wants to prove from the fact that that's the din, that you don't go up in the tree, that sukkah is not a kum v'yaseh, eating outside the sukkah is not some type of aveir kum v'yaseh, it is a shev al tasa. So in the context of that, he talks about our Gemara. He says, so what's the story in terms of Chazal possibly imposing it in this case? Is that a kumbi asay, a sheva al taisa? So he goes back and forth. It's an interesting tshuva. You could look it up. It's a chelak aleph, simon mem zayin. The tshuva is very long, but at the last page of the tshuva, he talks about this. So if you want to look it up, just skip to the end. On the very last page, he talks about this question about that mishnah in today's Daf Yomi and our Gemara today. And what do they say about the relationship of the din d'rabbanan and a impediment to fulfilling a mitzvah, possibly committing an avera, as a consequence of obeying the din d'rabban. So that Binyan Shlomo is relevant. So this is a question the Magen Avraham quotes from the Kikai and Diona. Rabbi Akiva Eiger writes that he thinks there's a pashut achiluk, that he thinks that the chiluk simply is that sometimes Chazal might insist on their gezeira when it comes from a different place in halacha. Right? This he doesn't necessarily mention this example, but like for example, the idea that we say don't blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah when it's Shabbos, so we decide to protect Shabbos at the expense of shofar or at the expense of lulav. So sometimes you might decide like there's a different value in halacha is a different mitzvah that's relevant, maybe Chazal imposed their gezeirah for that area of halacha in this context. But if it's all the same din, so then it doesn't seem to make sense. If we're talking about Shemira Shabbos, right, so it doesn't make sense to say that the Chazal told you to be Mechal Shabbos Daraisa so that you can observe a Shvus Drabanan for the purposes of Shabbos. That seems to be a little bit counterintuitive. It's an interesting question because this also comes up in a couple areas. It's also a discussion, for example, the question of whether Bizman Hazeh, if the practice is to shave every day, so should we allow people to shave on Chol HaMoed? And if the Gezeirah not to shave on Chol HaMoed is in order to protect Kavod Yontif, to push someone to shave Erev Yontif, not thinking that he can push it off until Chol HaMoed, because he only shaves once every 2 weeks or so, he'll wait till Chol HaMoed. So it's a discussion, the halacha, whether we say nowadays if somebody shaves every day, so is there room to take a different attitude? Especially, you might say, all the more so, because here the gezeira to protect Kavod Yontif for the first day will then force you to neglect Kavod Yontif for the last day, so it's all the same concept, it's all within the same din. So it's a fair question to ask. So it's interesting also that just if we want to use the comparison of when Chazal were Oker, a mitzvah min HaTorah, so there is a unique application of this that the Mishnah, the first Mishnah in Shas, first Mishnah in Brachos, talks about Sofzman Kriya Shema at night. So there's three opinions of the Mishnah of when the latest time you can read Kriya Shema is. So according to one opinion, we don't follow at all, it's the first fraction of the night, a quarter or a third. But according to the other opinions, according to Chachamim, it is until Chatzos, until midnight, and according to Rabbi Gamliel, you can say Kriya Shema all night. So what emerges already from the Mishnah is that really conceptually, Chacham and Rabbi Gamliel agree that Zman Kriya Shema is all night min HaTorah, the Torah doesn't put any limit on it. But Chazal were of the opinion that there's a gezeira, that you should have to read Kriya Shema before Chatzos because we're afraid you might come to neglect it. So Rabbeinu Yonah over there has a comment which many argued on. Shagas Aryeh has an essay where he disagrees with this, or Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva who disagrees with this, but Rabbi Yonah suggests that according to Rabbi Gamliel, it's all night, and Chachamim agree with him, so when Chachamim make a gezeira of midnight, so what's the impact of that gezeira? That they were okir the mitzvah of Kriya Shema after that. That according to Chachamim, if you come to say Kriya Shema at 2 o'clock in the morning, even though they agree that min HaTorah that works, they were okir the mitzvah. There's no key of mitzvah. So, this is a very controversial Rabbeinu Yonah, and it's got a lot of elements to it, but it's an unusual application, this whole idea, because unlike, let's say, shofar on Shabbos, we were saying, listen, it's worth giving up shofar to protect Shabbos, here we're saying that to protect Kriya Shema will tell you you can't say Kriya Shema. And you have to figure out, you know, what is even the logic of that? Is it saying that just this way you won't make the mistake the next night? Or similar to what we just said about shaving, that if you know you don't have the possibility of doing it at 2 o'clock in the morning, then we won't let you, then you'll be more motivated to do it earlier. You have to figure out exactly what the mechanics are, but it's an unusual application because it's really the only example that we find where Akiras Davar Min HaTorah is used within the same concept. That in order to protect Shema, we say, you can't be Yosei Shema. Vinny, you have a question?
Yeah, I would think that there would just be a big lechatchila.
Well, that's how everyone else would assume, right? That's where Rabbeinu Yonah is the chiddush, because the gzeira at least means that, right? Certainly the gzeira, if it exists, means lechatchila. It means that you don't have a right to say, it's okay, I'll say Shema at 2 o'clock in the morning, because you have lechatchila to do it before midnight. Rabbeinu Yonah's chiddush is that they were oker it after that. So this is very controversial, like I said, for a number of reasons. Although it's a little bit of an unnecessary controversy because nobody really holds like this. Nobody, including Rabbeinu Yonah, because Rabbeinu Yonah says that that's what Chachamim meant. But, if I remember correctly, he says, we paskin like Rabbeinu Gamliel. We paskin, it's all night. So it happens to be a machlokas rishonim whether we hold from the gzeira or not. So, sorry? It could be, right. In general, it's a surprising gezeira for other reasons. If that was our topic, we'd spend more time on it. But it's machlokes rishonim whether we accept the gezeira that's mentioned in the first Mishnah in Brachos, and it's additional machlokes what the gezeira would mean. So Rabbeinu Yonah is saying that we don't accept the gezeira, but if we did, it would have meant this. So since he is mechudish in that understanding, but he doesn't accept the gezeira, so it's not clear there's anyone who actually holds like this lahalacha that this is true. But so it's a very conceptual problem. But this is his notion that it would have meant that with the same mitzvah we tell you not to do in order to protect that mitzvah. So it's a surprising idea. So that's what Rabbi Akiva Eiger says here, that it wouldn't make sense to say uphold a shvus on Shabbos and through that be mechal Shabbos. That wouldn't make sense. The only way we could say that Chazal would have told you to make such a trade-off, which mathematically is already surprising because it's Dinderabbanan versus Dinderaisa, so the only way we could tolerate such a mathematical discrepancy is if it's in different areas of halacha. So then maybe there's a logic to it. But within the same area, it doesn't seem to have any logic. It's very interesting issue. That again, within this whole trade-off Gemara, how exactly we're making these trade-offs. Hi.
It might be a side note, but is it possible to say he's referring only to cases in which the Mishnah was referring to people who had the time period until the morning Karban or the Karbanos, the people who were busy with those things, pushed up Shema, they would have the possibility to be to tell them about the other things.
You think that if, you can refer back to the first Mishnah in Brachos, right, that because the Mishnah there talks about things that you should do all night, but maybe there's a gezeira. I'll explain what I'm saying maybe in a second. Just if you're not familiar, the first Mishnah in Brachos says that Chachamim say Chatzos, Rabbi Gamliel says all night, and then Rabbi Gamliel says, in fact, everything that is nighttime mitzvah is all night. He mentions there Hekdei Chalavim Ve'Varim, the burning of the fats and limbs of the Karbanos, are done all night. So your point of that comparison is that maybe in both cases, what's the issue? That
maybe when he says the gezeira, it's only referring to those cases.
Maybe when who says the gezeira?
When the chacham says it's only referring to people who are going to be busy with these things, then they'll have the possibility of pushing it off until the morning comes, the double hector, or whatever they're also busy with.
You think in other cases the busyness doesn't come up?
In other cases, I might say that therefore, I'm only talking about that case, and when the baby ever said that, he wasn't referring to comments in general, just referring to this case.
Could be. Happens to be, though, in terms of the other thing you mentioned in the Mishnah, Hekdei Chalavim Ve'Varim, it's also a machlokas Rishonim, whether or not there was such a gezeira. So Rashi and the Rambam have machlokas about this. Rashi comments over there that he's just mentioning this as something that's all night, but actually there was no Chazal gezeira in the case of Hekdei Chalavim Ve'Varim.
There is no time period on those things either.
Maybe. It's machlokas Rishonim. Mother Rishonim thought there was. There's a time period in the Torah that if the whole night passes. But the idea that there's some kind of chatzos deadline, so that it sounds like in the Gemara like there's a chatzos deadline for both, but it's actually in my books we've shown if that's true. That it might just be by. So there's a lot of very conceptual machlokes in over there. But the relevant in Yanenu is the idea that maybe there is a gezeira within itself, whether or not that makes sense. So that's what Rabbi Akiva Eiger is saying here, that it doesn't make sense that there should be such a svari here. It makes sense in Pesachim, because you're talking about other areas of halacha. So certain gezeiras because of Shabbos or because of other purposes. So then Chazal insisted on them, even though they had the consequence of sacrificing Korban Pesach or sacrificing Bris Milah. But it wouldn't make sense here to say that that math could apply when we're talking about the same mitzvah. Okay, so it's interesting that if you look at the Rambam in Hilchos Korban Pesach, I didn't put this on the Maamar Chumash, but it's in Perek Vav, Halacha Vav and Zayin in Hilchos Korban Pesach. So the Rambam talks about all those cases where Hamidu, Devrei, and B'malkum Kares. And he gives different explanations as to why they did it in that case. So Stam is interesting for our whole concept. And the Ravid disagrees with him. The Ravid says, what's he getting involved in all his suggestions? There, it's because the issue was a kares. The issue was a chilul Shabbos. The issue was other potentials within Korban Pesach, possibly. So there, when there's a potential kares, so Chazal, who made a gezeira to protect against kares, upheld it even makom kares. But other cases where there's no kares involved, potentially, so then Chazal wouldn't have been maimed their gezeira. So it could be, Rashi Weiss points this out also, that it could be that there might be a difference between the Rambam and the Ravid, that the Ravid is basically saying it only makes sense for Chazal to think about this when it's an equivalent onesh, when the math on some level makes sense. And you don't have to come on to the Rambam's other more technical explanations of when they would have done it, when they wouldn't have done it. It all connects to whether the math somehow follows. So Rabbi Akiva Eiger says the math has to at least follow within the same area of halacha. The Ravid seems to be saying the math has to follow at least in terms of the onesh involved, that we can't abandon the mathematical elements here and say that Chazal, just without factoring that in, said uphold a smaller concept and sacrifice a bigger issue. Okay, so it's a shame we're almost running out of time. I do want to just have to start this topic in the time that we have. We'll have to continue it tomorrow. And then hopefully move on to the next element as well. This is just a massive sugya. But okay, so then setting aside then the issue of that Gemara about Tamidu Devrayim B'Makom Kares, so what exactly is the, if that's not the issue, right? If we assume there's no stira from that Gemara for whatever reason, and let's assume for a second that Gemara doesn't exist, so then what is the suffix here? Right? If the math is so compelling, so what is the suffix? Why would we have a question? It would seem very clear that if you're looking at a chiyuv skila here, or anything close to it, or anything in that table, so then clearly ignore the issue of the drabanan of Radia Sapaz. Why is there a question on this issue? What's the suffix of the Gemara? Hi.
You can say that because you'd be actively over the Derevana versus passively over the Derevana.
Okay, so that's one possible suggestion. We could talk about that. Any other possible suggestions? All right, so let's... I don't know what's going on over there. But we'll have a few minutes left, so we won't try to address it now. But we'll have to continue this point tomorrow, but just to quickly address the point that you just brought up. So maybe that's the issue, right? Maybe are we assuming that a Sheval Tasa is always preferable to a Kumbia Se. But maybe there's some inherent issue with doing anything active. And that even though, yes, there's a trade-off between the Malacha, which is clearly a bigger deal than the Drabanan, but to violate a Drabanan, the Kumbia Se, to go in and take the item out of the oven, which will be a Kumbia Se, is worse on some level, somehow it's worse than allowing this malacha d'oraisa to take place b'sheva al tasa. So that is a possible approach. It definitely has a certain appeal to it, but it works off a certain premise. So how could you possibly? I can think of at least two ways you could question that premise. Anyone have a thought? How could you question that premise? At least two ways. Right, is it a given that if you allow this bread to be cooked, this is a Sheval Tasa violation?
Right, did the mice initially.
So one way to undermine the premise, potentially, and this is a very fertile ground for examination, is that it all goes back to your initial action. That here we have, similar to what the Rashash said yesterday, right? I mean, he said it 100 years ago, but we quoted him yesterday, that similar to what the Rasha said, that when it comes to Bishul or Zriya, it's all based on your initial Nisa. I'll deny that something happens later. So here we're talking about not canceling the Nisa, we're talking about canceling the tonight, canceling the condition. So maybe what it means, if you let this stay, we're not looking at a question right now, okay, you have a question of passively letting this stay. We have a question of upholding your initial maisa. So that will end up be defined as an active konviase. So that could be a question of the premise. Any other way to possibly undermine the premise? So we'll have to start with this tomorrow. I'll give you a clue so you can think about it during Seder. Is if we do work off the assumption that a konviase is inherently more chomer than a sheve al tase, why is that? What's the advantage of one over the other? And try to figure out how that might interact with this concept, and we'll pick up from that point tomorrow. All right, everyone should have a wonderful day.